Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Professor of Experimental Immunology in Trinity College, Kingston Mills, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Can I pick up on that question that I put to Patricia Carney with you straight away? Do you know anything more about the transmissibility of the new variants in outdoor settings? Same as the original strain, or are they actually more transmissible outdoors as well as indoors?
I think the short answer is we don't know, but it's very likely that if the virus is more transmissible, it's going to be more transmissible outdoors as well as indoors. So in general, the new variants are more transmissible. But having said that, I mean, I'm delighted to see that data from the HPSC, which suggests, which, you know, confirms what we'd all suspected, that transmission outdoors is much less than it is indoors. So that's good news for getting back certain activities such as sport and outdoor dining, for example.
And does it confirm it for you? I mean, is there enough international study in this area, even if our figures aren't particularly robust, to say, yes, we should be moving towards less restriction outdoors?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are lots of studies from China, from the US, other countries that have looked at this, and I think the conclusions are similar, even though there's 20% of the cases that we don't know where they come from. I think the issue around those cases are they're probably spread from asymptomatic carriers. So when someone doesn't have symptoms, they can still transmit the virus, and the recipient of that virus can present with symptoms. And they're really tricky to identify unless you're doing mass testing of the whole population. So that's the problem with that 20%. They really don't know, and there's no reason to suspect they're coming from outdoors or indoors. Maybe a proportion of each. And if proportion is the same and it's 0.001%, which is 1 in 1,000, it's very limited, the numbers that are transmitting outdoors. And it makes sense. I mean, you know, as your previous people said, that Orla and Patricia said, you know, it's common sense. Outdoor, the air just simply blows the virus away and doesn't get a chance to reach the person when someone coughs, sneezes or talks loudly. The air is not held in a room as it would indoors. It just gets blown away. So it's less likely, unless you're very close to somebody outdoors, of transmitting it.
Can we talk about the new variants in a little bit more detail, particularly the one in France, the Breton strain? Why would it be more difficult to detect in PCR tests?
Yeah, I mean, this is an unusual one. I mean, it turned out that people were presenting with symptoms of disease that were negative on the PCR test. And it turns out this virus has a significant number of mutations, I think 9 mutations in total. And, you know, what they do to pick up the virus by PCR, they amplify the genome coding for the spike protein. And that's the region that mutates. So the PCR may not be picking it up as effectively as it would pick up the non-variant, if you like, or the original virus.
Does that mean that we need to have two PCR tests working side by side, or would the adapted PCR test be good for all strains?
I mean, you can adapt the PCR to make it effective, but there's an alternative way of doing it, well, not for diagnosis, but for screening, and that is using the internal protein of the virus, which doesn't vary so much, the nuclear capsid or nuclear protein of the virus, and the N protein, and the antigen tests that are now being rolled out in the UK utilize the N protein. So it doesn't vary. So those tests will not be subject to the variation that the spike protein is. So these tests are not designed to replace PCR, but they're used. They're now starting to be used in the UK and other countries to pick up cases. And I was part of a testing group that reported the minister last week, suggesting that we should be rolling them out in Ireland. First of all, in workplaces, schools, and universities. But these tests will still pick up all variants.
Is the Breton variant sufficiently widespread in France that we should be putting France on our quarantine list?
I mean, that's a good question. The more worrying, and we don't know about the Breton variant in terms of the vaccine yet. We do know that the South African variant is an issue with the vaccines, because there have been a number of studies now from the clinical trials with the recent vaccines from Novavax and Johnson & Johnson, which shows the efficacy drops to around 60% against the variants. And in South Africa, a study done, a small study that people have criticized, done with the AstraZeneca vaccine, showed a drop to 10 or 20% against the South African variant. So the South African variant is, and the Brazilian, the P1 and P2s, are worrying in terms of getting in here. And we've already had a number of cases, but we need to keep those under control and not let them spread and not let additional ones in. I mean, I heard in the media that they said that these recent cases were not linked to travel. Well, they definitely came indirectly from travel, that's for sure. They mightn't be and that's even more worrying, because it means that it's already spread from someone that has traveled to somebody who hasn't. And it's imperative that we keep those numbers down, and if possible, not allow them to spread in Ireland, because that would be a real problem.
Mm. Does that mean that we really need to wait for the vast majority of the adult population, if not the children's population as well, to be vaccinated before we lift restrictions in any meaningful way?
I mean, in terms of travel and restrictions, one thing that other countries are looking at, and the UK are already talking about this, for May, is allowing travel for people that have been vaccinated. And the idea of a digitalised EU certificate, vaccination certificate, is something that's been looked at at European level. And I think it's a logical, extension of the success of the vaccine programme. And it is being looked at as a mechanism for allowing some travel to return during the summer.
Okay. And what do you worry about happening in the meantime with these variants, while we're in this stage with people being half vaccinated, not fully developing an immune response yet?
I mean, one of the really good bits of news that came out of a US study last week, or maybe it was the end of the week before, where they looked at people who had the Pfizer, who'd been given the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine, and they followed them for a couple of months by PCR testing them once a week to see if they had infection. Now, the clinical trials only looked for preventing disease. This looked for preventing infection. What they found was, after two doses of the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine, 90% of people were protected against infection, and after one dose, 80%. That's fantastic news, because it's suggesting something that we really didn't know for sure until now. These vaccines can protect against infection, and that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But so that means that even after one dose, 80% with the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine, which means that if you get a lot of the population vaccinated with one dose, you've got a significant level of protection. Remember, this is what the UK strategy has been, to go for one dose and then follow up with a second dose up to 12 weeks later. And it makes immunological sense to do that, because you get a better booster if you leave a longer interval. So I think the idea of vaccinating as many people as possible with one dose and then leaving a gap and coming back to those later is a good plan.
Kingston Mills in Trinity College Dublin, thank you very much.